Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Receiving this message.
We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus.
You have accessed entry 937.EZ4621, certificate number 42131. Pickleball!
We may have talked about this, but I couldn't lay my mind to it.
As the expression goes.
Yeah.
I couldn't lay my mind to it, as John Donne said.
As I lay my mind, I could not lay it upon this whether we've particular. Talked about this.
Yeah.
What's your sport?
No sport. Non-sport. Basketball.
If somebody said, "What's your sport?" I just did.
I immediately thought basketball.
Uh-huh.
But the fact that I'm terrible at basketball often leads to a pause before I leap in. It's the sport I like to play, and I think maybe we did talk about this.
Yeah.
Because I think maybe it was...
I laid my mind to that.
Yeah, I think I laid my mind to me doing this, and then you transitioning to skiing is probably...
Oh, that's probably,
right. What happened. It's the sport like I enjoy, like I can clear my mind. Occasionally I can get some in some zen space where I'm actually hitting a jump shot. And it's relaxing, it's good for me. And I was never good enough to make even my JV team at my terrible high school. So,
but if you were waiting for somebody to pick somebody up, say for instance one of your beautiful children, and there was a half court sitting there and there was a...
And there's just a ball?
There's a ball
just sitting there gleaming?
Yeah. Would you grab it and just start kind of shooting at the basket?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then at some point doing weird scoop shots, trying to sky hook, doing like pretending I'm playing horse.
And what about like if you and a friend have an hour to kill, would you go out to a court and sit and shoot baskets?
I think so. I mean, This presumes the existence of a friend who's just going to go hang out at the park with me for an hour. Because I've never, like I have a lot of friends who are aging like from maybe their tennis years into their golf years.
Yes.
And in many of their cases, you probably know
this. You have a friend that's really into golf now.
Yes.
Yes.
And that's all he wants to talk about.
I know. He's cornered me at a couple of parties.
Well, I think he knows I don't want to talk about it. And his wife never wants to talk about it.
And he knows I'll talk about anything.
Oh, yeah. You're a very avid, you're enthusiastic listener.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Maybe you're pretending? Unclear?
No. I want to, you know, what it is I'm very interested in what other people are into.
Yes.
I'm not personally into golf, but I'm very interested that he is so interested in golf.
Yeah, it is. Something about it is contagious.
Yeah.
But the fact that it's golf, just, I have a very hard time getting over the, really, golf? Like, if he had suddenly got into something super weird, like suddenly he's into whitewater rafting or ships in bottles, I'd be like, hell yeah, let's talk about that.
Oh my God, ships in bottles. Why have we never done an omnibus on ships in bottles?
Should we switch right now? We don't have to talk about pickleball. You have access. But yeah, just the stereotyping of golf. But anyway, do you have friends who are also kind of, do you have musician friends that are moving into their golf years and you're like, please don't base your life on golf?
Well, it's very interesting that you say that. You know, former and even slightly present,
I'm slightly present.
I know.
During the show.
I know.
That's what business card says.
That might be overstating
Ken Jennings, slightly present.
Nabil Ayers, drummer of the Long Winters and president of the Beggars Group of record labels and
author
and now newly minted podcaster.
Oh, I didn't know.
But anyway, he is married and she is from Los Angeles. They live in New York and they recently decided that Palm Springs was where they were going to spend their downtime instead of any one of the 1,000 more interesting places in the world.
Less awful. I mean, it's an odd call for a straight guy.
Well, you know, Palm Springs welcomes all comers.
Yeah, but it's very hot.
It's so hot.
If you're not going to be naked with all your male friends, what even is the point of Palm Springs?
Well, you know, the really interesting development there is that the city of Palm Springs decided that Airbnb was destroying the town, and they put like strictures on whole neighborhoods. Like this neighborhood can only have X number of Airbnbs.
Ooh. And is there a lottery?
Well, yes, and it's already exceeded that limit, so the rest of you are screwed. And the reason that real estate exploded in Palm Springs during the pandemic was everybody thought they couldn't go wrong, Airbnb-ing these properties. So now all these people Seattle, you know, who wanted to go there for 1 week a year, bought some million-dollar mid-mod, and now they're like kind of hung out to dry.
Literally hung out to dry. It's very dry.
It's so dry. But anyway, Nabil and his wife are getting into golf. She's very into golf. Mm. What I should say is he is following his wife into golf. And it has been the topic of some conversation among other rockers. Like, have you noticed, hey, John, have you noticed Nabil's into golf?
Because it's not rock and roll?
It isn't rock and roll.
It's not even yacht rock.
It's not. It's and also Palm Springs rock, Palm Springs golf. So I've had to say I have noticed, and I have no comments on it. Like no notes. Go on to golf, 54-year-old. You know, if you look,
a lot of it is the kind of people you imagine they're hanging out with. Like what kind of Trumpy Orange County guys are you golfing with?
If you look at a picture of Richard Burton when he was 54.
Was he alive?
He looks 89. And so we all look by comparison pretty great at 54. Go golf. Go stand out in the sun and golf. Who cares?
Yeah, there is the idea that you would go outside on a nice day and spend a couple hours doing a sport. I'm all in favor of it. But then when I hear it's golf, and then especially when you hear them kind of talk about how it colonizes your brain.
Yeah.
Is it possible that golf is an extra-dimensional entity, like a sentient sport that's colonizing the brains of our middle-aged Republicans?
Like some kind of UFO power? What's that television show where the UFOs are coming in 300 years?
Three-body problem?
Three-body problem.
Yeah, what if it's a par three problem?
It is. Well, they came in through the bathroom window, and now they're like in all of our corpuscles.
Because really, when you talk to a golf guy, like it really does take over there. Like I'm just sitting here and I'm thinking about my short game. Like something about it must be just as good as drugs because of the way it takes people over.
Well, it's got physics in it, right? It's an earth science in a way.
But it's elusive. Like you can't.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a jump shot. Like some days it's there and some days it's not. But for whatever reason, that doesn't keep me up at night or have me listening to podcasts or paying $20.
More than that.
Paying hundreds of dollars for new equipment.
It's hundreds of dollars just for the green fees in a lot of places. I bet you if you were a billiards player.
That's a big if.
Yeah, it would similarly occupy your thinking
Just because the geometry?
Yeah, because you've got this like, okay, and then I hit it like there, and it's going to do this. Like, there's no way you're going to do off three bumpers trick shot without having really thought about it.
Three bumper problem. I guess it's true. Like, Tetris does that. Like, there's studies showing that, like, people will just keep playing the game in their head for hours after it ends.
You must have had that happen.
I have had that happen.
Yeah, me too.
So it's just the golf equivalent of that. And it's more wholesome in a way because at least you're outside. And
see, I hear that every time golf comes up in conversation. Well, at least you're outside. Like it's some kind of like amazing feat.
Let's start saying that about homelessness. Well, at least you're outside.
At least you get all the fresh air of sleeping outside. I mean, that's what everybody says about every sport. Well, at least you're outside. Mountain biking.
That's the dream.
At least
you're
outside.
See how we're here with walls around us?
I know.
What are we thinking?
But at the same time, I'm going to start saying
the other thing. Well, you got a podcast. At least you're inside.
The thing is that being outside is hard work just to even do it, want to do it.
And you must put shoes on. That's something I don't do many days.
You have to go out in the blaring sun or in the drizzling rain. If you live here, there's only two seasons, mm-hmm. 9 months of 54 degree drizzle, as we say here.
Because it grizzles you.
And then 3 months where you're like, ah, the sun. And both things make it kind of hard to go outside.
You have to certainly work up to it.
And you've spent quite a bit of time in Los Angeles, but your time in Los Angeles tends to be like, I arrived.
It's my most indoor city. Yeah,
I spent one whole day inside and then I left.
I was in kind of a dark, dusty smelling gymnasium of a studio for 12 hours.
Full of bats.
And then I went back to my hotel. There is a swallow, I believe.
That lives up in the rafters?
Yeah, a swallow's nesting above Jeopardy.
One swallow.
I don't know. What am I, an ornithologist? Is it a brooding pair of swallows? I don't know.
Has a contestant ever gotten the good luck of getting pooped on by the swallow?
The swallow's backstage.
Oh, I see.
The swallow will never be appearing on TV. Although I did have there was a bug. And something weird, like a dragonfly or something, was suddenly
in the studio.
Yeah, it was suddenly on the stage with us, and we were trying to keep it out of shot.
Well, I've spent just enough time, like extended time in Los Angeles, to have like, you know, like any place you go where you're there long enough that there's no novelty, or you've worn off the first level of novelty. Yeah. Like you've surely had this in London or England where you're like, well, I've had every pasty.
Yep.
And been to every local pub.
It is kind of nice because it's no longer an adventure.
Right.
You're like, oh, I'm just going to go here and see what happens. It's not like, here's my list of gotta do's.
Yeah. But when that happens to me in LA, then you really have to confront the fact that it's always sunny, not in Philadelphia. It's always sunny in LA. It's always the same exact amount of sunny. And after a while, I find that very oppressive. I don't want to go out into that.
It's full of East Coast people who are like just patting themselves on the back for having discovered it. Like, I didn't have to live in Buffalo. Toronto was just snowy all the time, and now I'm here. Why doesn't everyone come here? Mm. And Seattle people never think that about Southern California.
Not a single time. I've been on a kick recently where I've been talking about San Diego a lot.
Just to no one?
That's, you know, just sitting in the bathtub like, and another thing about San Diego. No, I feel like San Diego is a great example of like a failed urban experiment. Like all the things that you could do to a city that in many ways is perfectly situated, right? It has a wonderful harbor. It's in beautiful, sunny California.
Ideal weather.
Hills right there, mountains. It's got La Jolla. It's got all these wonderful things. And yet almost everything they've done to improve the downtown San Diego experience has made it impossible to enjoy. Like they built a huge convention center right on the beach.
Mostly just for people dressed as the Hulk.
Yes, and with its back to the ocean.
Right, there's no way. Like if you're at the convention center and you want to get to the beach, yeah, just walk 20 minutes.
Yeah, all the way around the convention center to get over to, you know, to the pirate ship or whatever. And I don't know why I'm down on San Diego. Yeah. I like San Diego.
We're going to get letters.
I just feel like, I mean, LA whether or not LA or any American city is a failed experiment, which I think you could argue every single one of them is, we should all be living in our little agrarian towns with a single
towns.
Clock,
no,
clock
towns
tower.
Are where it all went wrong.
Oh, maybe you're right.
We should all be on farms.
Each person should have farms. 40 farming acres and a mule.
You should just be hunting and gathering in the Serengeti.
Yeah, thank you.
Sounds pretty good.
You know what?
Speaking of perfect weather, Serengeti.
If human beings had never left the Ethiopian Rift, none of the problems that we have in the world today would exist.
What would be the worst problem today if we were all still hunter-gatherers in Ethiopia?
Sloths. Giant sloths.
Just getting eaten by megafauna?
Just like, these sloths.
I'm sure they had lions back then. You could get eaten by something we still have.
Yeah. Well, were there no sloths when human beings came out of Africa? There were.
There were.
Sloths.
I think we killed them. That's where the megafauna went.
Exactly.
Humans one, megafauna zero.
Saber-toothed tigers and so forth and such. So they'd have their own problems and we wouldn't have to think about it.
That is a big problem. It's more important than your short game or your putting.
Every once in a while on the internet, if you go on DeviantArt, you can see people who have given themselves saber teeth. And it seems like advantage.
Like real ones?
Well, I mean, DeviantArt. Who knows whether it's real or not? But yeah, you could get... I mean, if somebody can
is this
get
the thing,
spikes
though? People are getting,
in their faces...
Are people getting body mods to get fangs?
Oh, for sure. For shizzle. Anyway, I'm fine. I mean, there are a lot of lovely people in San Diego, and I don't mean to disparage your city, but it came into my mind one day, like, wait a minute. San Diego, they really... You know, it might be the U.S. Navy that screwed it up.
I was about to blame the Navy.
Yeah. Let's blame the Navy.
So we have just upset people who enjoy San Diego and golf.
And the Navy. And I know for a fact we have a lot of listeners in the Navy. And to you, I say thank you for your service. And also, I don't know, but sorry, not sorry.
And they're getting something out of it. They can sail the seven seas, right?
Yeah, that's right. And all the free food.
That's why they joined. Three hots and a cot. I was three squares and a bear?
And a, yeah, Do three they, squares and a bottle of Nair.
And Nair, yeah. They give you Nair in the Navy. Those guys are kind of hairless. Wait, three squares and shorter hair.
Squeefers and forter chair.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. WATER to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Host. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethost.com/terms.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
You know, as I get older, of course, my mind is just turning to jelly. And I'm a little bit older than you, so I'm just a glimpse of what's in store for you, except you probably...
I'm still jam.
Eat better. Oh,
jelly don't shake like that.
You know, and the thing is, you're married, so that keeps you sharp. Because every every morning you have to wake up and figure out what your wife wants that day. Whereas I don't. I wake up and I'm like...
You can do spelling bee.
Yeah, that's all afternoon.
You can just do New York Times spelling bee instead of trying to figure out what your family wants.
You know, the thing about me is I do spelling bee at night because I'm awake at midnight, which you would be if you weren't, if you didn't have obligations.
I was awake at midnight.
Yeah. So as soon as it ticks over to the new spelling bee.
Oh, you do the new one.
Then I do the new one. I do the morning bee between the hours of midnight and one. And then the rest of the day I have, you know, then I go to sleep, then I wake up and the bee's already done.
See, I can't do that.
I know.
For some reason, I don't feel like I can't just sit and read a book during the day, but I can do spelling bee for 3 hours.
I know.
That's not bad for you.
It's actually been a great development for me because it used to be that you would pull up here at Omnibus HQ and if I were 3 or 4 minutes late, you would text me and go, I'm here. And now 15 minutes in and you're like, do-do-do-do-do.
Well, here's what happened.
Happy, placid cow.
I used to think that you were here maybe and I didn't see your car.
Right.
Is John in the garage? Is he in the driveway? I want to make sure he's not here before I sit. But now I'm like, there's no way he's here.
Yeah, that's right. I was already doing spelling bee and he could be 45 minutes late. I wouldn't notice.
And I've got my phone. We don't need to. I don't care about if anybody's late anymore. I like it when they're late.
Yeah.
I named my phone Mr. Phone. And now it's fun.
How long ago?
Just 5 minutes ago.
Like when you were 7 or, yeah, just recently?
A few months ago. And Mr. it's really, Phone. And it, so it just pops up as Mr. Phone when you Bluetooth connect to it or wherever.
Aww.
And it's fun. It's like you have a little friend. It's Mr. Phone.
Mr. Phone.
It's like my, I had a little calculator when I was a kid that looked like a wise old man and it was called the Little Professor.
I remember it well.
Do you remember the yellow buttons?
Yeah, of course.
It wouldn't actually do calculation. It was just kind of a speak and spell for math.
Yeah.
And
what was the one that had an owl? There was also one of those that was an owl.
Well, the Little Professor looked owlish.
Oh, maybe that's it.
It had glasses and maybe a mortarboard?
Mortarboard, I think.
Yeah, because obviously anyone smart.
Where's a mortarboard?
We were in Denmark a couple of weeks ago for graduation, and I think either did not know or had forgotten that when Scandinavians graduate, they just wear a sailor suit.
Huh?
Of course.
Ooh?
They don't have robes and a mortarboard. They just wear a sailor cap like Donald Duck everywhere. And so there's just party buses driving through the streets full of kids wearing sailor caps.
I wouldn't have, if I'd seen that go by, I don't think I would have known what it was.
I had to Google and, you know, it's not any more ridiculous than wearing a mortarboard. I mean, less probably.
Right.
A mortarboard's a much weirder thing to put on your head just balance-wise than a sailor cap.
I mean, if you saw somebody just like a cool kid just walking around and wearing a mortarboard, you would be like, I'm really not up with contemporary culture. Whereas a sailor hat.
Or he lost a dare.
Yeah, well, no, I don't think kids dare each other anymore because it's not inclusive. If you dare somebody, it's just a form of bullying.
It's true. You're making one person do something they wouldn't have done otherwise.
That's right.
And that's not affirmative consent.
And if they don't do it, then what? They lose? Lame. Oh, we don't say lame anymore.
I actually don't know what the right substitute is.
Bogus.
Suboptimal.
Yeah, suboptimal. I feel like a sailor cap, though, might be like queer positive because it's
sure.
It's a little bit
a little
like
Tom of Finland.
Yeah.
Tom of Denmark.
Exactly. Well, I have just to segue from wherever we are now.
You will not believe how we got there. It was old age to spelling bee, to me sitting in my car, to me renaming my phone, to me having a calculator with a fun name as a kid, to you thinking it was an owl, to why we wear graduation caps, to why they wear different graduation caps in Denmark. So you just have to get back up that chain to pickleball.
To pickleball, which is the topic of our show today.
It is.
Yes.
You wouldn't know it so far.
Pickleball, Ken, have you ever played pickleball? Have you ever seen it played?
Absolutely. I mean, you can't walk around this fair city of ours on a nice day and not hear the pock.
Pock.
It's a pock, the pock of pickleball.
It's a little bit of a pock.
A pock's upon all of us.
There are many people who agree with you.
I know pickleball discourse without ever having picked up a paddle.
You know pickleball?
I think so.
You know pickleball discourse? Are you part of the pickleball conversation?
No, but I observed the pickleball infrastructure conversation as it happened in Seattle and its suburbs. Mostly, I think, from noise-conscious neighbors, but I think also from tennis players who can tell they're being supplanted in the culture and are digging in their heels.
Tennis players digging in, although that is that the tennis player resistance, I feel like, has been overwhelmed by the empire. There was a brief period of tennis resistance.
Well, you knew it was doomed.
And here's another thing.
It was like the Alamo. Like, how many people possibly play tennis?
Other than golfers, I can't think of another group that has less sympathy from the majority.
Right.
Right? Like, oh, but tennis player.
But I was on the tennis team at Dartmouth.
And also, I mean, tennis was a faddish sport that somehow... If you really think about it, it's very interesting how many tennis courts were built as part of public infrastructure programs in public parks.
Yeah, like, especially relative to the number of people who want that.
Yeah, I mean, there's one basketball court and often like eight tennis courts in a public park where that the land for that eight tennis right. courts could be...
And think of the number of more than 2 to 4 people can use... A basketball court or half court.
Yeah, but a tennis court?
Tennis court takes up a lot of ground.
It really does for the amount of entertainment that's happening there. If you made it into a skate park, you would have all those kids with backwards baseball hats.
Missing tricks.
You know, not gumming up our city streets and sliding down our very important railings.
Railings, yeah.
Ruining railings.
Railing repainting could become an every 5-year affair.
That's the thing. So tennis players in public spaces, you know, I mean, you can put...
Now we're going after tennis people?
You can... Well, no, I this is how I got into the sport of pickleball, because I was a tennis person. Growing up, I took tennis lessons. My father and uncle and aunt were all avid tennis players. My uncle and aunt actually had a house with a tennis court.
My son just came to us and said, can we put in a tennis court?
You don't have the... Oh, out on
Lopez.
Yeah,
San Juan's, yeah. Can we put in a tennis court? And I said, no. But he's very into tennis all of a sudden.
Well, what about if you put in a basketball court that doubled as a tennis court?
I think that's his idea.
Yeah, right.
That's his new idea.
Well, the thing is, put up a pickleball court that's also a basketball court. The whole thing starts to come together.
I don't think he plays pickleball.
Well, not yet.
Do young people play pickleball?
This is what's happening. So the sport of pickleball, for those of you listening who have yet to see it like invade your community, and I think there are fewer and fewer of those people.
Right,
if we'd done this show 4 years ago, people around the world listening to Omnibus would have gone, huh, pickleball? What's that?
But it's kudzu.
But pickleball now is the fastest growing sport in the world.
I think I heard of it. I mean, even though it's local in origin, as I'm sure you will cover, I think I didn't hear of it till about 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? 10?
Well, 10 would have been even pretty early for mainstream people. But, you know, you're reading the trades.
Right. Well, I think it's just because I was in Seattle.
Yeah.
And maybe it got here early, just like COVID did.
Interestingly, pickleball was taught in Seattle public school gym classes all the way back in the 70s. It was one of the optional sort of gym activities, not in every public school, not in the ones that I attended when I lived here, but in Bellingham, there were kids that took pickleball in gym.
We never had it.
Yeah.
I'm just picturing jump rope and parachute.
Yeah, jump rope and parachute. I mean, there are schools in Seattle, I think a lot of them now, that have frisbee teams. Mm. Seattle is home to some real championship ultimate
we are
players.
Epicenter of ultimate somehow.
We are. But pickleball is actually a sport invented here. And the rare sport that has, although it's over the course of 50 years, no, almost 60 years.
Jeez.
It spent most of that 60 years as just sort of a local, obscure, almost jokey kids game.
It's like Calvin Ball or something.
Calvin Ball. But it's the rare sport that sort of just invented in a backyard has ascended now to the relative heights where it's beginning to trouble the International Olympic Committee. Like, well, got to get pickleball in there. Like, how long is it going to be?
I mean, if breakdancing is an event, which it is in Paris.
In the Olympics?
It is.
You what now?
You don't think of breaking as an Olympic sport?
I mean, I guess like gymnastics, like the what's the open event in gym?
Rhythm? No, floor exercise or
floor
rhythmic
exercise.
In rhythmic, they have the props.
Yeah, rhythmic. I mean, breakdancing at its finest is at least as much of a sport
as gymnastics. Yeah,
but
funky. I can't remember if it's exhibition or not.
That's pretty exciting. It's interesting that it didn't go into the X Games, as opposed to like into.
It was never in the X Games, huh?
No.
Well, that just shows its legitimacy.
Yeah, or it shows the whiteness of the X Games.
That's probably true as well. You don't want to see snowboarders try breakdancing.
Well, yeah, it's very San Diego. Let's just put it out there.
I mean, pickleball is Seattle, but not within the city limits, right?
Well, interestingly, it was invented on Bainbridge Island, which is right across the Puget Sound from Seattle, a short ferry ride away. But it was invented by the Pritchard family, who were actually residents of the Ballard Queen Anne neighborhood. It was invented at their...
Oh, they had a place out on Bainbridge?
Yeah, they had a vacation cabin. And this is maybe hard for the millennial or Gen Z generations to understand, but there was a time in recent history, even in our lifetimes, Ken, you and I, or yours and mine, when a middle-class family could own a vacation home,
just a cabin outside
in Seattle, that's a short ferry ride away, and have it be a humble cabin and also not be rich people, right?
Yeah, Bainbridge Island was probably very different in 1970 or whenever this was.
Well, it was 65. So really, we're coming up on 60 years of pickleball.
How are you planning to celebrate next year's?
Well, I have a year to plan.
Yeah.
I have a year to plan. So
I need to know do the Pritchards know what day so we can actually have fireworks? And
I'm guessing it was in the summer, right? It would be very strange to be inventing this sport in 54 degree rain.
It would be very strange to go to Bainbridge Island in November. And be like, hey, what should we do in the backyard?
Well, golf plays into the story only in that golf is too boring for the Pritchard family.
Ooh, they're thrill seekers.
Yeah. So, Washington State Congressman Joel Pritchard, and again, this sounds like a fancy bunch of fancy pantses.
Like he's state legislature, or he represents Washington in the House of Representatives?
Well, he, in the course of his career, did both things. Hmm. But at this point in time, he's actually in the Washington State House of Representatives. Joel Pritchard was a World War II veteran who represented, and a Republican, but during a time when the Republican Party was not the Republican Party of today. In fact, Joel Pritchard at one point introduced a piece of legislation that allowed abortions up until the fourth month of pregnancy or whatever as part of some liberal Republican platform in 1970. So a different kind of right. Republican, and probably from an era where you would never, we will never see again, where you could live in Seattle and be a Republican who held public office for like 35 years.
Well, you were saying he was middle class and had his humble cabin, but it sounds like he's from he's a big deal. He's from a political family.
Yeah, but I mean, having run for office here in Seattle, it's very interesting to think. To realize that to be a member of the Washington House of Representatives, that's a like $40,000 a year job. It does not make you, unless you are engaged in graft.
You can see why they're all taking bribes.
Ken, a lot of them are like fine and upstanding citizens.
Public servants.
But yeah, like the Seattle City Council pays itself $180,000 a year, but the Washington House of Representatives is like, I guess it's $55,000 now.
I mean, the Seattle City Council has to live in Seattle. Most of the state house does not.
They can choose right. To. I mean, the worst part of the state house doesn't.
the prices are a little different in Wenatchee.
But then he acceded then to the Is that the right word? No.
Sure.
A seed?
I think, well, I mean, that kind of seems like he somebody died.
Yeah, well, maybe not died, but then he was elected to the Washington Senate and then eventually did become a member of the U.S. House of Representatives, and he served there for like a decade, 12 years, I guess.
When did he? Like, I've never heard of
this. The 70s into the 80s.
Okay.
And then in the late 80s became the Lieutenant Governor of Washington, and he served in that role until 1997.
And it took 60 years for that to drop into the second most important thing on his resume, below pickleball.
Well, yeah, that's right. Now pickleball is like at the top, right? But he was lieutenant governor, the point of pride. Although
are they going to redo his tombstone?
The Pritchard family is very excited to have invented pickleball. And you can picture the scene. They're there at their cabin. Joel is out with his friend Bill Bell playing golf on Bainbridge Island. And they come home, and all of their kids are just sitting around. Meh, there's nothing to do. Like kids everywhere.
I've seen kids on vacation.
Yeah.
And they didn't have phones.
No phones, no computers, probably no television reception, wherever, you know, whatever tree-covered plot it
all
was.
All they can get is KSTW 11, and they're so mad.
But what they did have at the house was a badminton court. And
hours of fun.
They said, you know, let's go get a game of badminton going. But as they sort of searched the garage,
they can't find the equipment.
They find like a bunch of random sort of rackets, and there's a net.
Can I just say I love stories where some accident or carelessness leads to an amazing invention.
That's what it is.
You know, like the potato chip or benzene or whatever it is.
Depending on who you ask, because there's actually, you know, inevitably some amount of controversy surrounding, just because there's more than four people involved. So everybody's got a different story. But whether it was that they couldn't find four rackets or they couldn't find a shuttlecock, like they might have had the rackets, but they couldn't find the little badminton birdie. Or they had the birdie, but they couldn't find enough rackets. They realized they couldn't get a badminton game going. And so they're rummaging through the garage, like, let's get what we do have. And they had some ping pong paddles, and they had a wiffle ball. And so they said, well, let's see if we can get this going. And they sound like a fun-loving family.
It's like one of those cooking shows where it's like, your ingredients are a wiffle ball, four ping pong paddles, and a badminton court.
That's right, and a bunch of bored teenagers. And they get going, you know, sort of hitting the wiffle ball with the ping pong paddles, and they found that it actually worked. The wiffle ball would bounce. It was a cement badminton court. It wasn't like a beautiful English lawn. And so pretty quickly they realized they had to lower the badminton net down to be like a tennis net, you know, put it down. And a badminton court has different dimensions from a tennis court. It's much smaller. And pretty quickly, the game of pickleball got going. And I'm sure they were all thrilled that they had come up with this new.
I see people playing in the park, and it's, from what I can understand, it's pretty much what you would intuit if you were trying to play a tennis or badminton-like doubles game with
a ping pong paddles and a wiffle ball,
right? Yeah. There's nothing that's surprising about it.
No, what's, I guess, surprising is that you can hit the wiffle ball pretty hard with the ping pong paddle, and so you get the satisfaction of a real tennis swing, but the wiffle ball doesn't travel that far, but it does bounce. So you can, it is a sort of, the experience is duplicating a tennis game, but in a much smaller space.
It's like you're playing underwater or, you know, on Jupiter or something.
Yeah, right, where there's just slightly more, it's a thicker atmosphere.
Right.
And so the next day, their friend Barney McCallum came out, and they were like, look what we did. We invented a game. And Barney got into it. And so after the weekend was over, he went back home.
Is there beer, do you think?
Oh, sure. I bet there was. I bet it
would pickleball not exist without anybody being pickled?
I bet it was Rainier beer.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and
artesians?
And so one of the controversial elements is, how did the name pickleball
I was going to ask
come? And the I think the canonical story, the definitive story, as told by Joan Pritchard, who is the one that coined the term, this is another very Northwest thing, and it references an earlier episode about the Washington crew. In the crew, because this is an old Seattle, a Seattle where crew was the big sport, and people, you know, there weren't enough golf courses or badminton birdies to go around.
The boys were in the boat.
The boys were still in the boat. And in the crew, in Washington crew, the slang term for the boat that was made, the crew shell that was made up of all the kids that didn't get picked for the varsity or the JV was called the pickle boat, which was like the ragtag boat of...
It's just losers?
They're just the losers that end up in the pickle boat. And she said this sport, you know, was basically the pickle boat of paddle sports.
It's the C-listers.
And then they named their dog Pickles.
But that post-dates the game.
It post-dates the game, but it did confuse some of the neighbors. I guess the pickleball, there's some malfeasance in the pickleball journalism community.
What?
Because somebody went to the neighbors and was like, where did the name? I mean, why are you talking to the neighbors? Joan Pritchard's over here. She's got the story.
They're trying to get the dirt.
Yeah, but somebody was like, no, they named it after their dog Pickles.
It's all about ethics in gaming.
In pickleball gaming journalism. But you know, Barney McCallum went home and said, look, one thing that's pretty clear right away is that the paddle isn't big enough. This is going to be a pretty good time, but we just need a slightly bigger paddle.
Is this guy Paul the Apostle? Like
a little bit.
Like the Pritchards preach their gospel over on Bainbridge, but we need Barney to cross the sea and really nail things down and improve the rules.
I think really quickly they discovered that the wiffle ball isn't actually the best ball for pickleball. Because the wiffle ball, if you can think of a wiffle ball,
don't the holes in it make it kind of curve?
Well, that was the idea. The wiffle ball was invented in the 50s. You know, the 50s were a great time for inventing new toys because the boomer kids were extremely annoying even at a young age. And their dads had all fought in World War II and had engineering experience.
And you had all that money pouring into military materiel, and all those inventions just turned into the Etch-a-Sketch or whatever.
Exactly, or the Monopoly game, or the hula hoop.
Slinky.
And the
all
and
DOD money.
The wiffle ball was one of these, and it was invented by a guy named David Mullaney, who was trying to teach his kid how to throw a curve ball. And the wiffle ball is, yeah, it's solid on one side and has kind of vented holes on the other. And
they're vented at some angle that makes the travel not
easy to throw a curve ball or a slider. And then you can hit it with a bat and then eventually a wiffle ball bat, a plastic bat, as a kind of, again, a baseball game in a short space.
I realized we just did stickball, which is kind of the East Coast pickleball. How do you play the fun grass game when you don't have grass or fun? Except, you know, there it was an alley, here it was just a little badminton court by your cottage.
Right. But if you can picture the Pritchards' garage with all of this sports equipment that's all kind of just in a jumble, in searching for a replacement for the wiffle ball, they found what was called a Kosum fun ball, which was also a 50s invention.
Kosum?
A Kosum, you know, invented by...
Bob Kosum.
And a Kosum fun ball is what now appears to be what looks like the canonical wiffle ball, which is a plastic ball the size of a wiffle ball, but it has holes kind of unevenly drilled in it so that it doesn't impart that spin to it. It's a little sturdier than a wiffle ball.
Is it kind of a rubber ball?
No, it's not rubber. Oh. It's molded plastic.
Oh, so it's hard like a... So they do not taunt Kosum fun ball.
The Pritchards probably went to Fred Meyer and they bought one of every kind of summertime cheapo toy.
They're scientists now.
I bet there were.
Do you remember that aisle of summertime cheapo toys not bubble wrap? What do you call those?
Preformed plastic containers. Yeah. And I'm sure there were hula hoops in the Pritchards garage too, and I'm surprised they didn't incorporate them into their brand new game.
What about that little clown thing you put on your hose and the...
And it,
the hat shoots up, yeah.
I wonder if at one point they didn't try to do this with us also running through sprinklers.
Yeah.
Or maybe there was a slip and slide. But the coast
at the time, there's only maybe a week you could slip and slide. Global warming has really changed the sprinklers, running through sprinklers community.
In the 70s, we definitely had a slip and slide, but you're absolutely right. My mom had a rule. It had to be 80 degrees to fill up the swimming pool. She didn't want us in the swimming pool when it was 72
degrees.
Was it
like one of those waiting pools?
Or yeah, like a little waiting pool. And to use the slip and slide, it had to be 80 degrees. So I remember.
You sit by the thermometer.
Yeah, in the 70s, staring at the thermometer, it would be 78 degrees. And mom would be like, nope.
I'm picturing one of those big dial thermometers, like a clock that your grandparents had, and you're watching the arrow creep up through the 70s past the PNE to the 80 that's a marigold or something.
No, I remember it very distinctly. It was a mercury thermometer.
Oh, wow.
And it was tall. It was, you know, it was 12 inches tall. And watching the mercury go up. I mean, how many, that's another thing, like cursive writing. No kid is even knows what I'm talking about. But watching the actual mercury go up this thermometer. And
yeah, are you like Euclid or something you're watching?
And, you know, my mom was a real stickler. So if she said 80 degrees, she meant 80. But at 79, I would make such a fuss.
Please, she would go, okay.
Assuming that by the time I got the pool filled that it would be 80 degrees. But you remember when it was hardly ever 80 degrees in Seattle.
1 week in the summer, you'd need to get out the box fans. By the way, blister pack. People were yelling blister pack at me.
Blister pack!
And I heard them. I heard them through the ages.
Through the times. Well, so the Pritchards, you know, being a political family, being a kind of Ballard Queen Anne family, being Republicans in that era, and also Seattle being a smaller town, the sport of pickleball started to spread among their associates, their friends of, and they were obviously social people to have had so many Cosum fun balls in their garage just waiting to be co-opted. And so people in their social world started to also want to get in on this pickleball fun. And one of their friends, Bob O'Brien, in 67, was the first person to purpose build a pickleball court.
To different dimensions than a badminton court?
Nope, pretty much the same. And the rules of pickleball were pretty quickly established by the Pritchard family based on kind of the layout of a pickleball court. And they're just throwing rules like at the wall, pretty much, how to score. Pickleball, only the serving side can score, which is similar to tennis.
Sports seems like an arena where good ideas actually do prevail, which is not true in a lot of other, you know, public policy, for example, or art. But in sport, like if a game is fun, it will catch on. And because you can imagine how if this game is not good, you can imagine these yo-yos coming back from their cabin and being like, check out what we invented last weekend on Bainbridge. It's so fun. You have to play some, you know, brutal card game with somebody coming back from vacation. No, okay. That's great. I'm sure this was fun.
We're living in a board game culture, and I know you enjoy trying them out. And we've made the mistake of buying some board games that seemed really cool, you know, like a Star Wars theme or whatever. And you get it home and you realize that there's a whole culture, business culture of people inventing board games and trying to get people to adopt them. And some of them are so complicated, and a lot of the moves are just irrelevant to the sport of the game. Like, why am I keeping track of how many flibbity gibbets I've accrued? Like,
I can't say it. I hate all these kinds of games that I don't want to turn off the rest of our audience.
Oh, you're afraid that there are enough Omnibus listeners who are like, I love collecting the flibbity gibbets in that game, even though they don't score or have any effect on the outcome.
Just these new table, not new, but like the last 20 years of tabletop games where everything is kind of, the game is kind of load balanced. The rules are complicated. There's too much to keep in your head at once. So you can just, you know, I guess keep playing for years and trying out new sorghum trading strategies.
If there weren't other things to do.
Right. And I'm like, no, no, no. I just want a game I can like be good at or not and have like a social time.
Yeah. Everybody wants a game that takes 1.5 hours to play to completion. But in this case, I think one of the good innovations is that because the court is so small, it was pretty clear right away that you could get into volleys where the ball would never touch the ground. You just hit it. The person across the net from you would hit it back, and you could kind of sit there like,
because it's like tennis. A bounce on your side of the net is legal, right? Like, sorry, when it comes to you.
Yeah.
Okay.
And in fact, one of the innovations of pickleball is that in the return, like after your serve, of course, it has to bounce once before you return it. Mm-hmm. But then the first return has to also bounce once before you hit it back. So you can't serve and then rush the net and
that's
volley.
That's probably necessary on such a small court just to keep it from being a kill shot every return.
And this is the other thing. In the front, next to the net, there's a region that is colloquially...
You got it.
Colloquially called the kitchen. And within the kitchen, you can't stand inside the kitchen area close to the net and volley it unless it has bounced in the kitchen. If it bounced, which is...
It would be difficult to do because it's so close to the net.
Yeah, so if somebody tries to spike it in the kitchen, you can get into the kitchen to return it. But you can't just stand in the kitchen and whack it down. Because, I mean, a tall person could reach almost any pickleball coming over the net.
This is to keep seven-foot people from just dominating.
Just standing.
The Will Chamberlain rule.
And the fun, I mean, most pickleball games you see are actually doubles games. People love to get in there, and it's a fast...
I guess I assumed it always was a doubles game. It's not?
You can play singles pickleball. I prefer it, in fact.
I think the court shortage in Seattle is probably what leads to me not seeing a lot of singles pickleball.
Well, so as you can imagine, pickleball by the 70s had spread out to... the regions that Seattleites go in the winter. The snowbird community leaving Seattle goes to, name the places.
I don't know, Hawaii, LA.
Hawaii and Palm Springs. And to a lesser extent, like Arizona and, LA, California. So pickleball by the 70s had kind of regionally expanded. But it does seem like the Pritchards and the McCallums and the Bells had a pretty good sense of humor about pickleball, but also were savvy enough to have copyrighted.
Oh, I didn't know this.
Pickleball.
It never occurred to me. Has anyone made money off of pickleball? I have no idea.
Well, and they established Pickleball Incorporated.
Wow.
As early as like
it's ominous.
The late 60s. By the 72, they had trademarked it. And so in the mid-70s, like the first pickleball tournament actually happened in Tukwila at some...
I hope there's a statue there now.
Some court down by the mall.
Yeah.
And the sport continued to grow in very small ways, and it made its way into retirement communities. It was...
It's tennis you can play without, it's all the muscles and the memory of tennis without the endurance, the injury risks.
Yeah, right. And it's got, and for a lot of people, I think of what was retirement age in the 80s, those people had grown up playing tennis. That was the sport, and this was an iteration of it that was just much easier to play and
when your mobility's down.
Yeah, and required less room.
The tennis court gets really big when you're slow. I know firsthand.
Yeah, I know. It's all the way over there. You have to run all the way over there.
I'm over here.
Boy, you telling me.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Host. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethost.com/terms.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
One of the transformative moments, or a big moment in pickleball history, in 2001, it was offered. It was included as a exhibition sport at the Arizona Senior Olympics.
Oh man, I remember this.
Yeah, at the Happy Trails RV Resort in Surprise, Arizona. And the Arizona Senior Olympics attracts senior Olympians from all across the country.
Is this, are there multiple senior Olympics, or does Arizona host like the flag, the equivalent of the Olympic Games for older folks?
In 2001, Surprise, Arizona hosted the Senior Olympics. Now, whether or not the Senior Olympics travels around the country and occurs in different Happy Surprise Trails resorts.
Yeah, I bet it, different RV parks. I bet it travels less than the Olympics, though. I bet it's a lot of Arizona, New Mexico.
I feel like Florida is where pickleball. What happened was senior Olympians went back to Florida having competed in Arizona, and they said, "Look at this. We've figured out, or we were introduced to this incredible sport. You can still buy Kosem Fun Balls at any drugstore, really. All the component parts are easy either to put together or buy."
Are they still using ping pong paddles and not any kind of?
No. By this point in time, Pickleball Inc. is manufacturing
mail order stuff,
specific pickleball stuff. And so, but you know, cheap to come by, easy to acquire.
How late do you think it takes to go into a Dick's Sporting Goods and see pickleball stuff? Is that like 5 years, or is that?
Oh, you're saying from its invention,
yeah,
or
like did it take 40 years to get pickleball stuff into sporting goods stores?
I mean, one of the great things about sporting goods stores, as you know, spending as much time in them as I do,
I can't believe I'm not there today,
is you've got to fill that whole big barn up with stuff. And so there's a lot of stuff in a sports store that you would think
that can just sit there for years.
Yeah, what the heck is this? Like, think about all the lawn darts that were there and garden games.
Cornhole is filling the lawn darts aisle now.
That's right. So I bet you there was a small section next to the ping pong paddles of pickleball paddles. And I'm sure I saw it as I was looking for whatever lawn dart it was I was sent to the store to buy.
Yeah.
I'm sure my eye went across pickleball and thought of it similar to badminton. Like, oh, that's a croquet level garden party sport that I personally don't have a vacation cabin on Bainbridge Island. So I'm not that bored. And have no...
Do you think the name is an asset or a liability? Is it off-putting that it's pickles, or is it fun? It's pickleball.
I think it's fun. I think pickleball does sound... And it, to me, because pickles sound sort of European, because, you know, that's where vinegar was invented, it sounds a little vinegary.
Now the Chinese are mad at us.
You know, it sounds a little... It sounds like an import, like something, it's like a...
Like it's fancy?
Well, because pickle...
Sounds like pumpernickel.
Sounds like a Dutch word, doesn't it? Like, oh, pickle.
And all the best sports
are
Dutch.
Pickle just sounds like some kind of fish in Dutch. And so, yeah, I guess in my mind, I always associated...
It doesn't make it sound like a children's game, though.
Yeah.
Like it would be like, let's play pickle tag. I'm the pickle.
Yeah, that's right. You are the pickle. So pickleball was burbling under the surface nationally, predominantly as an old folks game, because, of course, it was invented in the mid-60s. The Pritchards, by the 80s, were, he was lieutenant governor by the late 80s.
Did he use his mask of state power to further his pickleball empire?
I think he did.
The official state lawn sport of Washington is now, what the hell?
He probably, you know, talked about it because as lieutenant governor, he's the deciding vote in the Washington State legislature, and he probably slipped it in.
Broke a lot of ties in favor.
By the 2000s, it had become an institution within the retirement communities across the United States, across the southern United States, and in the South.
What a weird map this must be when you watch the pickleball heat chart.
Yeah.
Sproing from Palm Springs to Hawaii to Arizona to Florida.
By the mid-2010s, Larry Ellison,
really
CEO of Oracle, he had acquired the tennis club in Indian Wells, Palm Springs, and in addition to whatever must be thousands and thousands of acres in Palm Springs, and he instituted the U.S. Pickleball National Championship.
He was a fan.
Or hosted it. Oh, must have been a huge fan.
My dad used to work for Oracle. I think Ellison was like kind of a martial arts guy. He was a fitness guy. I remember I've seen pictures of him in a, what do you call what Bruce Lee wears? A kaftan, a dojo, a taibo.
It's a taitong.
He's wearing a taitong.
Yeah, some kind of, he's a sporty guy. And again, like, you have to see pickleball in action to appreciate, like, what, once you realize, because there are a lot of people in retirement, as attested to by the Senior Olympics, that maintain physical fitness and play pickleball at a competitive level. And a spirited game of pickleball as played by athletic people is pretty exciting. I mean, exciting. More exciting than golf, let's say, to watch. Have you seen on the internet a like Olympic level badminton game?
I watch a lot of table tennis.
Yes.
Those are fun.
But badminton at an extreme level is insane to watch, because the birdie,
so fast, yeah,
the birdie goes fast at first
and then it slows quickly.
Yeah, and so you can hit that birdie with alacrity, and yet there's this kind of dodging, dying quality to the bird, as would be true if it was played with the real bird by the time it had been hit.
That bird would slow down pretty quick. But also, we do not endorse this.
Do not play badminton or pickleball with a live bird.
Do not get the swallow out of jeopardy by playing pickleball with it.
And like a lot of sports, there was some disagreement within the governing bodies. Initially, there was an International Federation of Pickleball established in 2010. But within the ranks of the International Federation of Pickleball, there was enough dissension about the rules and the implementation of the rules that there was then a World Pickleball Federation in kind of opposition to the International Federation of Pickleball.
Oh, it's like a boxing thing.
And the International Federation of Pickleball then changed its name to the Federation of International Pickleball.
Seems I don't like it. The federation should be international, not the pickleball itself. Do you know what I'm saying? It's not a federation of international pickleball.
Yeah, it was International Federation of Pickleball, and then it was International Pickleball Federation.
Oh, okay.
That's what it changed its name to.
That's
it
didn't, all
right. Yeah. So, and that just happened recently. But pickleball became a very popular sport then at fire stations.
What?
Because firemen, when they're not mopping the floors and cleaning their fire engines...
Oh, they're playing indoor pickleball?
Yeah, they can...
They've got all that space.
They can sit and play pickleball in teams, you know, like doubles pickleball, and they're firemen, right? So they're very... I don't know how much you know about firemen
culture.
I've
seen the calendars. They are very fit.
They're extremely competitive. They're like bros, right? So they're like amping up pickleball until it is a... there becomes violence in it, you know, like fireman violence into pickleball. So it isn't then just a retirement sport. It becomes a sport that you can play in a compact space. And what what they figured out pretty early is you can take a tennis court and turn it into two pickleball courts. So as pickleball spread, there was all this real estate.
Little used tennis courts.
That you could step into and, you know, double the capacity. And yeah, those tennis courts, I don't know, you know, 10 years ago when you drove past a municipal tennis court, there were two kids out there bopping it around.
There were spider webs on the net.
Yeah, it wasn't quite as zippy as it had been.
But when they tried to change the tennis court in my neighborhood into pickleball courts, it immediately got undone when all the grumpy tennis players nearby just, and their argument seemed to be, but it's been a tennis court for a long time, and the neighborhood caved.
So what happened was the pandemic. And during the pandemic, there was, as you recall, suddenly it became very clear to us that we needed to go outside. We couldn't do any of the things that we had formerly been forced to do, like go to work or leave the house to do things. And there needed to be, we needed to do something. Right.
There's no bars or restaurants, so what on earth?
And so pickleball was a natural, you know, it had already kind of reached a tipping point of popularity just by the endorsement of Larry Ellison. But, you know, it had come
kids
to...
Kids love Larry Ellison.
It had come to that place where enough people were aware of it. It was being played by this point in all 50 states. It was something that you could go vacation with grandma and you could actually play grandma.
You can learn it quick.
And learn it quick. And the rules are really obvious. I've watched a couple of people step onto a pickleball court having never even heard of it. And within an hour, we're playing pickleball. I mean, not even embarrassing pickleball, but like, yeah, we're playing a fun game now.
Is it because it's pretty flat at the high levels? Like great pickleball is rare, bad pickleball is rare. Everybody's kind of a pretty good pickleball player.
Yeah, it doesn't take much to be, you know, fairly good at pickleball. There is pickleball. You can play pickleball in a wheelchair. There's actually a set of rules specifically for wheelchair pickleball.
It's probably a sport where, like, people in and out of chairs could actually play each other.
They can.
Which is pretty rare in sports.
In a situation where one side are in wheelchairs and the other are not, different rules apply to each side of the court, which, you know, that's a pretty fun sport, right?
I mean, it does not work in
It doesn't you know, work baseball. In tennis, right? Yeah. Or baseball. So during the pandemic, the pickleball exploded. And as some suggest that the game increased 600% in number of people playing pickleball over the course of the 3 years of the pandemic.
Wow. A good idea whose time has come.
A good idea whose time has come. Cheap, easy, fun. And that began this colonization of tennis courts that immediately started to
piss off boomers,
create a huge backlash, not just from tennis players, who again are maybe among the least sympathetic antagonists in the world, but pickleball is loud.
That's what I kept hearing, that the neighbors didn't like it. Is that true?
Because tennis is like boop, bonk, boop, bonk, boop.
But it's just faster in pickleball?
Pickleball is pop, pop, pock, pock. Like every time you hit it, it pocks. And when the ball hits the ground, it pocks.
Is the puck inherently less mellifluous than a basketball dribbling or another kind of park sound?
It is at a particular, I mean, it's 70 dB, a well-hit pickleball.
That's so as loud as.
It's loud, but it's also in a frequency range that people find particularly annoying. A tennis ball is a softer thing. A basketball has a kind of ping to it. I mean, if I lived next to a basketball court, I'd be kind of bummed by it. But there's a rhythm to it. Whereas pickleball has a kind of puck, 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 puck. Like it never settles down into a tempo.
I think, I don't know. Are there technological fixes?
We'll get to that. But the way that tennis courts were situated in the 50s, when there was a big tennis court building boom, was every kind of housing development had a little set of tennis courts associated with it. They were in public parks that were surrounded by houses. And so all the people that had been living in these homes went from either occasionally hearing a tennis game to just hearing nothing over there except a kid on a skateboard to from dawn to dusk, every tennis court is two pickleball courts, and it just sounded like popcorn to people, or basically like living next to a shooting range.
Because there was a shortage. There were more, there were lines to play.
Yeah, that's right. And every pickleball court in Seattle on a sunny day is pretty much like lines waiting to get into the game.
I think they had to do a reservation system, and there's just people camping at 6 a.m. for when next week's reservations come up.
Yeah, which was not true of tennis. So people started filing lawsuits. There was a case in Oregon where there was some city council meeting where people were screaming. The pickleball in 2023 was the like featured topic at NoiseCon. NoiseCon, which is
there's a convention about
people about irritated about noise.
That should be everyone. We should all be at NoiseCon.
And like what the latest noise is in many suburban communities, it has replaced leaf blowers as the casus belli.
It does sound like NoiseCon would be a pro noise convention. Yeah, we love noise, so yeah, we're going to NoiseCon.
More noise. Pickleball players, of course, are also boomers, and many of them are dicks, so then they would go and make noise just to irritate already irritated neighbors.
They're protesting at NoiseCon.
But what that produced was within the pickleball, the now enormous pickleball industry, a movement to mitigate the sound of pickleball, the irritating sound of it. Actually, a man by the name of Bob Yuntich started Pickleball Sound Mitigation LLC. But really
I'm trying to think what you would do. The court?
I mean, all the things that you would try to do.
Because it's going
to
hit the racket more than the court.
Yeah, they don't really, you can't just hang up fabric. But there are new developments in pickleball paddle and ball design.
Okay.
That are trying to cut down the Cosum Fun Ball is no longer the pickleball of choice. There are pickleball specific pickleballs, and I've played with many different kinds because I am one of these people.
Confession:
during the pandemic, the neighborhood tennis court converted to pickleball courts. I went down there one day and said, "What new abomination is this?" And watched these old people play a very fun-looking, athletic game of pickleball. Because I'd been playing tennis at these very courts. And then
Does it look more fun than tennis? Are you like, why am I playing tennis when this exists?
Well, you know, tennis is like, you can injure yourself.
Yeah.
Although pickleball injuries are through the roof. Insurance companies now have to deal with all these new pickleball injuries.
Is it like repetitive stuff, pickleball elbow or whatever?
It is pickleball elbow. In fact, the city of New York, much to everyone's humorous consternation, not city of New York, the county of New York, declared pickleball a dangerous sport at one point.
And like classifying it with rock climbing or
whatever?
Yeah,
and all of the anti-government types were like, there's another example of government, you know, lunacy. Thanks, Biden. But where we are right now is pickleball is veering into being a billion-dollar sports industry. It shows signs of eventually being an Olympic sport.
Does it ever get professionalized? Spectator sport?
Nope. There are professional pickleball players. In fact, I watched a video of a couple who made the pilgrimage to Bainbridge Island. The Pritchards don't want everybody on their pickleball court.
I can imagine.
But it still is there. And these folks were pro pickleballers enough that they were in contact with the Pritchards and got invited to the house, and they played pickleball, like gnarly level, pro sports level pickleball on this old badminton court.
It's like when you go to Cooperstown and play old-timey baseball or St. Andrews and play golf.
Yeah, that's right. It's and eventually...
That's funny that in 100 years it could be some St. Andrews-like destination.
Yeah.
Bainbridge Island.
Well, and what's funny is there's a Pritchard Park on Bainbridge Island, and it is named for Joel Pritchard. But what it is a Superfund site where there used to be a paper mill, and Joel Pritchard was kind of instrumental in getting it cleaned up. And
can
so
you play pickleball there now?
When I was like, I'm going to go to the Pritchard's pickleball court and I'm going to light a candle for pickleball. And I looked up Pritchard Park and I was like, that's amazing. And no, it's like a waterfront park. That's where it's there, a dirt cap over 100 million cubic feet of despoiled land.
Nice. So don't go to Pritchard Park, but also don't sneak onto their property.
Right.
And start playing pickleball because they will hear you.
For now, if you want to make a pilgrimage to the championship title of pickleball is called the Bainbridge Cup.
Oh.
And the first time the Bainbridge Cup was ever awarded was in Madrid, Spain. So Bainbridge Island has become...
That's so funny.
Maybe Bainbridge will one day be best known for being the Pritchard Cup.
It'll be the Cooperstown of Puget Sound. And that concludes Pickleball, entry 937.EZ4621, certificate number 42131, in the Omnibus. Please forgive us for our... it's a gi, by the way, the thing that martial arts...
Oh, right, a gi.
Somebody was mad about that for half an hour.
It's called a gi.
We should, at the end of every show, just be blister pack, gi... We can do the addenda in real time now. When we weren't playing pickleball, we were on social media. I guess my pandemic thing was not social media. I guess it was kayaking. I got into kayaking.
What do you mean your pandemic thing wasn't social media? Yes, it was.
I guess everybody's was. But I didn't get more. I think I got less into social media during the pandemic.
Well, I certainly did.
And so we were at Omnibus Project on various platforms. You could find other listeners in our time by looking for the Futurelings on Facebook and Reddit and elsewhere. Please send us information about blister packs and gi and those little hose things where the clown's hat goes up in the sprinkler and possibly a calculator that looks like an owl. Send all that to the omnibusproject@gmail.com. In fact, if you have... physical, if you have an old Little Professor calculator or a...
I would love to see one of those.
Or a clown head you put on your sprinkler.
It's possible we can get my daughter into one of our weird, ColecoVision footballs or whatever.
Yes, exactly. Send all that to P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington, 98155. I got some mail right here.
Yeah, I saw you brought some mail in.
What have people been sending us? Possibly their self-published work. Oh, no, this is from Amazon. Let's see.
It doesn't mean it's not somebody's self-published work.
Oh, no, this is our listener, Nat, who is a... I've met him. I think we've mentioned him before, Peanuts expert. Comic strip and comic book expert. And he has compiled... I think in the Summerton Man Show, we said... we would love to read a book of supermarket comic strip ads of the World War II era. That does seem like the kind of thing we're likely to say.
Is that something that we said? I can't deny it.
It seems so likely that we did.
It does.
And weirdly, Matt has compiled and annotated a collection of supermarket comic strip ads of World War II called Wife Gets Smart, Makes Husband Happy.
Love it.
And these are they're really well drawn. I mean, it kind of looks like Apartment 3G or, some Leonard Starr strip, Mary Perkins or something. But these are fun. And I'm sure they're going to have fun and misogynistic storylines about housewives and couponing.
Yeah.
Here's one. Marge is convinced.
Oh, what is she convinced about?
Oh, I haven't.
The importance of canned SpaghettiOs?
No, stocking away fruit for winter. Looks like she's going to be canning the fresh fruit she buys at Safeway.
Well done, Marge.
In the warm months. And then the following week, Roxana learns about meat.
Roxana. There aren't enough of those Roxanas left in the world.
Here's a quatrain on... Would you like to hear a quatrain about food budgets?
Be the Roxana you want to see in the world.
There's not a lot of Roxanas
at
all.
Yes, let's hear the quatrain.
Here's a quatrain about food budgets. He gave his wife money for food. A week of good eating ensued.
Good.
But some of the money remains. Safeway is why, she explains. See, she has leftover money in her budget because of all the savings at Safeway.
Well, that's awesome.
Thank you, Nat. I can't wait to get into these. Actually, I'm saying that non-ironically. If you're interested in the supermarket comic strip ads of World War II. Look for Wife Gets Smart Makes Husband Happy online. You can support the show any number of ways, but most directly by blessing your own life by going to patreon.com/omnibusproject. For a mere shekel, what's the expression for a small amount of money?
A mere pittance.
A mere pittance, exactly. You must have a pittance.
I have literally four pittances.
Go through your pockets, go through your couch cushions. If you can collect a pittance, just a few American dollars, you could become a Patreon supporter, which would immediately give you access to, early access to every new episode when it drops ad-free every Tuesday.
That's right. 2 days early and ad-free.
48 hours, you'll have inside omnibus information. You know, it's like, you know, you could just dominate the futures market, because when this, you know, when Pickleball comes out on Thursday, you would have known for 2 days that there was about to be a spike in pickleball awareness among Omnibus listeners.
And those of you who are listening to this on Tuesday, bravo.
Good job.
Yeah.
Those of you who are listening on Thursday, shame on you. No, thank you for your patronage, but thank you more to the Tuesday people who are listening ad-free and didn't have to hear anything about HelloFresh or whatever.
Yeah, you listening on Thursdays can support us by listening to the ads and buying those products, because that encourages advertisers to continue to advertise on podcasts, right? If exactly. Every ad on podcasts produces zero bump.
If it's all skipped.
Yeah.
The second you hear me say to John, "John, are you interested in Squarespace?" Like,
if you punch out, then
the ads are going to go away.
Yeah, that's right.
And not in a good way.
And you know what's going to be here? Ads for
McDonald's and Mitch McConnell.
And weird, like, nutrition fads.
Yes. Yeah, weird. The supplements will get sketchier until morale improves.
And beer. You know, that's what's really coming. Budweiser.
Is that right? Beer ads on podcasts?
Well, that's what everybody in podcasting hopes.
I just turned
beer and car.
I just turned down an ad for something called CBD Stillery.
CBD Stillery.
So it's both, somehow it's both weed and spirits? Mm-hmm. Unclear.
Can you imagine weed infused spirits?
Finally.
There are some guys with curly mustaches who are just bouncing up and down at the
instead of
excitement.
A little worm at the bottom of the bottle, it's like a little joint, like soggy a little joint. What's it doing down there? And you'll have immediate access if you support the Patreon to over 50 full length addenda entries. I think, is that right? Over 50?
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Look at that. A wealth of omnibus content you have not even touched. So consider what a pittance can buy you, and go to patreon.com/omnibusproject. Support right now.
Futurelings, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come. Or rather, the catastrophe we fear may never come.
I thought you just said the same thing twice.
Well, no, but I often feel like the copy could be misinterpreted as
we fear may never come. Here's what we say. Of all the things that we hope will never come, among them, chief among them, is the catastrophe we fear.
That's right.
Should we start saying that?
Yeah, let's do that.
That's so good.
Can you write that down? If the worst comes soon, this recording, like all our recordings, may have been our final word. But if Providence allows, we wish you many goods and cheese and hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.
Stop letting the summer heat make you miserable at home. The revolutionary portable AC unit from NoMoreHot.com gives you instant cooling anywhere without the huge electricity bills. Whether it's your hot bedroom or stuffy living room, this portable cooling device from NoMoreHot.com is a must, unless you love sweating all summer long. Visit NoMoreHot.com and save 50% on your purchase of the number one portable cooling device in the United States today. That's NoMoreHot.com.